Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I am Mike Spofford, sitting alongside my trusted colleague, Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And, Wes, we're another day closer to Saturday night football. Packers-Vikings, 7:30 p.m. nationally televised kickoff at Lambeau Field. And when you look at this matchup, I know we're not talking about Packers playoff prospects. We are potentially talking about some implications for the Minnesota Vikings. But when you look at this as the rematch of the first Vikings game from this season and the fact that Brett Hundley will once again be the quarterback for the Packers, the same matchup, but a lot of different circumstances for the Packers' young quarterback in terms of what he's walking into this time.
Yeah, exactly, Mike. The first time he was thrown out there, he had never really played extended time in a regular season game in meaningful football. So it was a new world for him. And I think you were talking to him a little bit about this during his media scrum on Wednesday. A little bit of shock to some extent as far as stepping out there for the first time against, let's be honest, one of the top defenses the NFL has to offer.
Yeah.
Well, now he has 7 starts under his belt. The game has changed a little bit for him. And he's also coming off arguably his best performance against the Cleveland Browns, particularly in that second half. So a lot of things working in the right direction for him. And I'll say this, Mike, you said it. I mean, there's no playoff implications on the line with this matchup. But tell Brett Hundley that this game isn't meaningful.
Right.
I mean, this is everything for him. These next 2 starts is everything for him in trying to prove that he can be that type of quarterback. He can be a guy that can be counted upon in the NFL.
Yeah, and a couple of other things that are different as well. Brett Hundley in that first matchup was dealing with a mishmash or whatever you want to call it on the offensive line. Guys were in and out of the lineup, guys getting injured. I think by the end of the game, at least 3, if not 4, of the guys who started that game on the offensive line had left, and the Packers were really just trying to piece it together. So there were a lot of moving parts in that game. Since then, the Packers' offensive line has settled into what is essentially 4 of the primary starters from the beginning of the season, and then plus a second-year pro, Jason Spriggs, settling in at right tackle. So he's got some more stability in front of him here dealing with that Minnesota defense that he didn't have last time.
It was almost funny listening to Lane Taylor talk about that game and what it was like being in the locker room, because it started off with Aaron Rodgers was in the locker room dealing with the broken collarbone. Then Taylor comes in with the ankle injury. I believe Quentin Rollins was also part of that. There was another player, too. I'm missing off the top of my head. But it basically ended up being like 4 or 5 guys were all sitting in the training room watching this game. And that's a tough moment for everybody because, as Lane said, I mean, at that point, it was pretty obvious. It was pretty clear that Rodgers had broken his collarbone and was going to miss extended period of time. Taylor didn't know what the status of his injury was at that time. And I just think on the field, it was just such a hurricane of different things that happened to the Packers on that day.
Yeah.
Not to mention you're playing in U.S. Bank Stadium early in the season, the energy that the Vikings fans were feeling at that time, trying to go in there and show that they not only are a top team in the NFC, but a team that can compete with where the Packers were at 4-1. So, it's a much different scenario now. It's going to be colder. It's going to be a different environment, but there is, as you said, Mike, there's a lot more stability there in front of Brett Hundley. I think that's something he'll benefit from. He certainly has in the games in which he's had the same starting offensive line protecting him.
Yeah, I would agree. And another change, unfortunately, on the negative side, though, is he will not have his favorite target for this game, and
correct,
that is wide receiver Davante Adams. He has officially been ruled out for Saturday night's game. He remains in the concussion protocol after taking that blindside block head helmet-to-helmet shot from Thomas Davis in Carolina last week. So Davante Adams has been a go-to guy for Brett Hundley in his run of starts here in 2017. So who do you see maybe stepping into that role? Will it be Jordy Nelson? Will it be Randall Cobb? Will it be one of the tight ends? How do you see Brett Hundley going about it here?
Well, first and foremost, Mike, you hate this. I mean, I think everybody kind of knew this is where it was trending.
Right.
Adam's still in the concussion protocol. You want him to get healthy, but he was trending towards being able to get that 1,000-yard season that barely eluded him a year ago.
Yeah.
So to have it end on that Thomas Davis hit, and that's not to say he couldn't come back from the Lions and get it, but it's going to make the trek a lot more difficult for him depending on what the Packers decide to do there and how he comes along in the protocol. That being said, you don't have him. Brett Hundley does have a lot of experience, though, with these young guys on this roster. So a guy like Geronimo Allison has to bounce back. He has to dust himself off. He has to be ready to be that number 3 receiver. Trevor Davis could get more looks. You always have Jeff Janis there. Even a guy like Michael Clark, maybe he's active in this game. Maybe they take a look at him. That's the opportunity the Packers have right now, is to see what fits, who could get some looks and learning more about some of these younger players on the roster. Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb are going to be as steady as they've always been. I think you're going to see both of those guys step up in this contest without Davante Adams. They have to do that. But also seeing how they use that third receiver role is going to be very important in this game and probably pretty telling about what the Packers are thinking, you know, down this final stretch of the season and going into this offseason, which young guys they want to take a look at.
Yeah, and if there's going to be one of those receivers who will be really fired up, I think, over these last two games, it's going to be Geronimo Allison because of what happened at the end of the Carolina game. He was having a solid performance for the most part, filling in for Davante Adams. He catches the slant pass that's going to get them inside the 30-yard line and gets the ball punched out. Heck of a play by the Carolina quarterback, Bradbury. I take nothing away from him, but you know Geronimo Allison left that field in Carolina just feeling terrible about what happened. He's got a couple of games here to try to, you know, get his arrow pointing back up heading into 2018.
Yeah, and with all due respect to Geronimo Allison, he's had some really nice performances, but, I mean, this is a second-year guy that entered the league as an undrafted free agent. Davante Adams is a Pro Bowl caliber receiver. So to go from that and the guy that had that many snaps to having to go to Allison, who's played pretty sparingly as that number four guy, it's a big drop off. And that's kind of sometimes what happens when you lose your guy to a vicious blindside block and the next guy has to step up. But as you said, definitely an opportunity and something he can learn from.
Yeah, absolutely. With that, we'll toss it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkiewicz in that one. And Wes, the Pro Bowl rosters were announced this past week, and the Packers actually did not have any Pro Bowlers make the initial cut for the game in Orlando coming up in January. A couple of first alternates, Mike Daniels and fullback Aaron Ripkowski, they will both have a tremendous opportunity potentially to get into the Pro Bowl because a lot of first alternates do end up stepping in and playing. But if there's one guy for the Packers, I think, who has had what you would have to classify as a Pro Bowl season, but the recognition in this particular instance did not come his way, it's left tackle David Bakhtiari.
Yeah, and if you talk to a lot of guys in that locker room, head coach Mike McCarthy especially, some disappointment that Bakhtiari didn't get in. And McCarthy wasn't going to stand at the podium and criticize anybody. It's a process. It is what it is. But the Packers feel strongly about what he accomplished this year. And I'd be honest with you, Mike, maybe on the level, last year was a really strong year for him. It was an all-pro type season. But when you factor in the fact that he had that hamstring injury right at the beginning of the season, an injury a lot of offensive linemen don't really have to deal with, just based on the freak nature of that injury against Seattle. Misses whatever it was, four games.
Four and a half, because he missed the second half against Minnesota
He came back. Yeah. And then puts together and establishes himself the way he did. We know what he can do as a pass blocker. That's been proven since day one. But how he's evolved his game in the run blocking scheme and how they've been able to run to his side of the ball with him and Lane Taylor, I think both of those guys have improved exponentially at those positions. So the thing I guess I'm confused about, and this is nothing against Lane Johnson, nothing against Trent Williams. I mean, Teron Smith obviously has the name recognition there as one of the top left tackles in the game. But, I mean, both Williams and Johnson, I mean, I just don't see how Bakhtiari is not in that conversation, especially considering Trent Williams missed four games. So Bakhtiari missed time. If you want to hold that against him, fine. But it's just very strange how that process worked out. And as he was even talking about in the locker room, too, a very real possibility he could be all pro again this year, which means then you're one of the top four tackles in the entire NFL. So if you're all pro,
except they are voting left and right side this year,
correct.
Right?
Yeah, but between first team and second team, you're still all pro underneath that designation. So I'm really curious here to see how this plays out and exactly what it's going to look like. But he said it will be funny if he's a two-time All-Pro and a one-time Pro Bowler.
Yeah, that would be that certainly would be a little strange. But with regards to the Packers not getting any Pro Bowlers at this stage, I know a lot of fans are, they're upset. They're saying, hey, this has got to be an indictment of the Green Bay Packers roster because there just isn't enough talent around, Aaron Rodgers. Look, the point I think that needs to be made is when you don't win football games, you're not going to get a lot of recognition. All you have to do is look back at 2013 when Aaron Rodgers missed half the season and the Packers were 8-7-1. Yes, they squeaked into the playoffs with a dramatic victory. But that was even after the obviously that's after the Pro Bowl voting even takes place, because it comes out a couple of weeks before the end of the regular season. Packers didn't have any Pro Bowlers at this stage in 2013 either. Eddie Lacy and Josh Sitton both ended up going as alternates and became the Packers 2013 Pro Bowlers. But when you don't win games, this is what happens. And I think in the case of Bakhtiari, the combination of the fact that he missed essentially the hot stretch the Packers had early in the season with Aaron Rodgers when they were 4-1. He missed the bulk of that with the hamstring injury. Then he comes back and he gets himself back to the Pro Bowl level, but the Packers aren't winning consistently. Right. Brett Hundley's the quarterback. The team is going through a lot of ups and downs, and now the team ends up being eliminated from the playoffs with the loss to Carolina. So a lot of circumstances that go into this that, in my opinion, don't really reflect the talent level of the players, when really – the difference between Trent Williams, Lane Johnson, David Bakhtiari, Tyron Smith is not as great as maybe some vote totals might say.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing that stands out to me, too, last year I made this point in Insider Inbox when people asked about, you know, the winning and how that balances with basically who goes to the Pro Bowl. I mean, ask the Oakland Raiders what the difference is and how that even equates to a Super Bowl run. I mean, they had seven or eight Pro Bowlers last year. They lose their quarterback, they're out of the thing.
Right. They were considered not even a contender once Derek Carr went down last year.
So, I mean, it's interesting. They have some really good players there, no question about it. But when your quarterback is playing at an MVP level, I don't think there's any surprise that that's the year the Packers got a ton of guys there in 2011 or in 2014 when I think Sam Shields and a bunch of other guys. There's more spotlight shining on those guys. There's more opportunity for them. So, yeah, I think that goes without saying. Now, I will say, adding this on, we'll be very interested to track Mike Daniels' situation here. He is a first alternate for the Pro Bowl. He's been a two-time previous just alternate, but that first alternate designation means he's probably the next guy up if somebody drops out either due to injury or because they're playing in the Super Bowl.
Right.
So that will be one thing to monitor.
Yeah, absolutely. With that, though, let's toss it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. And Wes, we need to talk about a subject that it's being talked about around the NFL. It's all over our Insider inbox. We sit at our desks out there and talk about it. All this stuff going on with the catch rule and replay reviews and reversals and conclusive or inconclusive evidence. Where does it stand right now in your mind, and is the league going to do something about this? Because the thing we keep hearing from fans, because we get emails from fans in our Insider inbox all the time, is games are becoming unwatchable because of these extended delays and all the confusion with the rules. What's a catch? What isn't a catch? Where do you think this is going?
So, two things. One, I don't know how you feel about this. You're obviously much more intelligent than me. I think you doubled me up on the ACT scores. All right, so Wes Hodkowitz, when these things happen, all right, I feel like the kid who's staying after class trying to have the teacher explain to them what they just learned during the previous 45 minutes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And the teacher keeps reiterating it, and I'm just sitting there going, I don't quite get it. This process, it's not working.
Yeah.
That something needs to change. I think what happened 2 years ago, whenever they tried to come up with this clarity or this not really changing the words, but like, you know, just trying to become more, it just got more mangled.
Yep.
And I think there needs to be a group. I don't know if it's the competition committee. I don't know who handles it. But I think people need to sit down and they need to go, we need to make this simpler.
Yeah.
Because right now it's way too convoluted.
Yeah. It's funny because I think back to, and I still remember seeing the highlight when it happened, week one of 2010, Lions at Bears at Soldier Field, right at the end of the game. Calvin Johnson catches what everybody believes is a touchdown pass in the end zone because it's in the final 2 minutes of the fourth quarter, because they weren't automatically reviewing all touchdowns at that point. It's in the final 2 minutes of the fourth quarter. It gets automatically reviewed. And this whole thing about surviving the ground as a receiver to make a catch comes into play, and what everybody believes was a catch by Calvin Johnson in the end zone for a touchdown is ruled incomplete because of the ball. He had it in his hand, but then it hit the ground and it came out, even though it looked like he had already caught it. And ever since then, there's just been this mass confusion as to really what constitutes a catch. And I think the rule, the way the rule is written, makes perfect sense. I think what's frustrating people and what's frustrating you and me and all fans that watch football is the questions of consistency, the consistency of the application of it. And I'll also say with regards to replay, whether you're talking about the catch rule, you know, what happened to the Pittsburgh Steelers against the Patriots this past weekend, they think they've won the stinking game and it gets taken away from them. When you're talking about replays, whether it's catches or other types of replays, there's a big question right now as to whether the call on the field really is carrying the value that it's supposed to have, or whether they're looking at the replay and, you know, parsing every last final detail and just making the call regardless of what the call on the field is. I think there's a lot of inconsistency in the application there as well.
And this is the disappointment, Mike. I thought with the centralized replay that this would actually help this process. And to be honest with you, I really don't think it has. I do believe, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not going to get into all the who's of who of their officials in New York, but I think it hurts the league that they don't have a Dean Blandino type guy right now, like a figurehead. You knew, good call, bad call, Dean Blandino was going to step up in front of it, explain it, and tell you why it was ruled the way it was or why it should have been changed.
Yeah, Al Riveron is the guy now, and he's coming under a lot of fire for some of these decisions that are being made in the replay command center in New
York. It's not an easy job. I sympathize with these guys. There's a lot going on. There's sometimes, 12 games being played at the same time? But, I mean, the frustrating part of it is what you said. I just feel like the rules as they are not being really, from one situation to another, being carried over properly.
Yeah.
How you fix that, way above my pay grade. No idea. I'm just the guy on the ground screaming up at the top, but something needs to change because I'm with you. Whether it's a fan, whether it's a media member, whether it's just somebody wanting to turn on a game, it's tough to watch going through this process and then also being confused after you know the application of whatever they feel is the proper call.
Yeah, I've always liked, I think it was Mike Holmgren was the guy who came up with the line, the former Packers coach and Seahawks coach, who said, you know, if 50 guys in a bar are looking at the TV and they say that's a catch, then it should be a catch. Yeah. I mean, there needs to be some common sense application to it. But also with regards to replays, I really think the league has to decide, are you going to stick with the language of the rule, which is that it needs to be clear and conclusive evidence to overturn a call that's made on the field? Or are you going to look at these replays 9 and 10 and 12 times and take 3 or 4 minutes to look at it and then decide what the call is? Because if you need clear and conclusive evidence to overturn a call, you should be able to make that decision in 30 seconds or 45 seconds, and then we move on with the football game. Yeah. And when that's not happening, then I don't know how you can say that you're changing these calls based on clear and conclusive evidence when you're looking at the replay a dozen times.
And Marvin up in the control room is going to shout at me because he's going to tell us we need to get to a break.
But yeah.
I need to ask you this because someone asked us in inbox about whether or not there's a time limit. When I was younger, I remember there being a time limit.
I believe it was 2 minutes. Yeah. It was either 90 seconds or 2 minutes, something like
what
that.
What happened to that?
Yeah, they just flat out got rid of it. They just flat out got rid of it. But maybe that's part of the solution here. You know,
I think it is.
I don't know.
I think you got to keep the eyes on
because
the
you're not – the one thing that's not going to happen is you're not going to roll back the technology. You're not going to roll back what the fans can see at home with the HD and the super slow-mo. We've gone past the point of no return on that. So now you have to figure out a way to deal with it. How do you get the calls on the field to match up as best you can with what the fans are seeing at home but not have these 5 and 6 minute delays to look at a replay?
Take too much.
Yeah, all right. Well, Marvin's telling us to get to a break, so we're going to go to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford next to Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, quickly before we go today, I want to touch on a rather unheralded player for the Packers who is putting together a season and is actually on the verge of setting a franchise record. I'm talking about rookie punter Justin Vogel. The franchise record for net punting average in a full regular season is 40.3 yards. That was established by Tim Mastey in 2015. The net punting average being a record that's been kept since 1976 in the Packers' annals, just to be clear. Justin Vogel, two games to go, 42.6. He's got quite the lead on that mark. Now, he's got a really cold game against Minnesota here to deal with, which can be tough for punters. Then he has a finale in Detroit indoors. His odds look pretty good to get this.
Yeah, Mike, I think you and I can go back to training camp and we can talk about the fact that Justin Vogel has a live leg. I mean, he's a lot of leg talent.
Yep.
In his and it's 6'4", 219 pounds. He looks like a receiver, to be quite honest with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, he does.
In a lot of ways, though, that's typically the build you look for in those really elite type punters. Packers knew they needed to make a difference. We need to make a change at that position this year, and that's nothing against Jacob Shum. Came in last year, did a fine job with what he was being asked to do with coming in basically 1 week before the start of the regular season. But Justin Vogel was one of the more heralded, you know, prospects in this draft class.
Yeah.
And he comes to Green Bay, and a credit to him, Shum ends up hurting his back. Vogel really never faces any competition whatsoever, but stays to the course, been consistent, wins the job. And I think all year long, you talk about that. You get off to a fast start, the weather's great. It's when it gets colder that things change. And so far, he's still been consistent throughout that.
Yeah, I think the one thing the coaching staff continues to try to harp on with him is they'd like to see a little more consistent placement of the punts, maybe not so many right down the middle of the field. But it's hard to argue with some of the results in the statistics. I didn't realize when he kicked a touchback in Cleveland a couple weeks ago, that was his first touchback of the whole season.
Yeah.
He's placed 17 punts inside the 20-yard line now and only one touchback. That's pretty good.
It is. You don't get to be a Pro Bowl alternate by accident as a rookie. I mean, people have taken notice of him.
Yeah, all right. Well, with that, we've got to call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, you can find him at Wes Hodd. I am at Mike Spofford at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.